Hey, Pierre.
Good day. How are you?
Hey, it's Michael. I have Gina Schock on the line for your 10 minutes.
My 10 minutes.
How the hell are you, Pierre?
I'm great, thank you. These 10-minute things are always tough for me. I won't be more than 20 minutes, I promise.
Very funny. Go ahead.
It is 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia, and we have the great pleasure of the company of a very, very talented lady and special lady who's part of an amazing group. They happen to have the distinction of being the only all-female band to write their own songs, play their own instruments on a number one record. They came about in 1978. They were part of the L.A. punk scene. As their sound evolved, though, they just had so many great, great songs. And Beauty and the Beat was their first major album. Huge. They went on to sell over 7 million copies of all kinds of records and all kinds of amazing songs over the years. And the drummer of that band is Gina Schock, and we have her with us now. Good day, Gina.
I'm really excited to be talking to somebody in Philly, Pierre, because, you know, I'm from Baltimore.
I did know that, yeah.
People always say to me, oh, where are you from, Philly? And I'm like, good call, because a Philly accent's just like a Baltimore accent.
It's not that different. That's not that different. Well, MMR has a particular connection with the Go-Go's in that I just watched the amazing Showtime documentary last night on the Go-Go's history.
Thank you, Pierre. Thank you.
You're featured prominently in it, and it's beautiful, it's brutal, it's honest, but it tells the tale of a great rock and roll band. And one of the things in it is the producers came to us and they said, do you have any archival material? And we had a show that we broadcast live from Emerald City in 1981 on WMMR. And a lot of the songs, if you go to the very end of the Showtime special, are credited from the vault of the WMM archives. So kind of cool.
But I remember that Emerald City show.
You do?
I met someone there, a friend of mine named Brian Bruden, and he and I are still dear, dear friends after all these years.
Wow.
And that's so weird, Emerald City. I'll never forget that show.
Well, it used to be a famous club called the Latin Casino long before my time, and Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr.
My parents were going to the Latin Casino all the time. My parents would drive from Baltimore and go to the Latin Casino.
And then it closed and it became a rock club for a couple of years, and then it went away altogether. But we still have that recording, and it's also got released on a vinyl record called The Go-Go's Have a Party, but it's the WMMR broadcast from Emerald City. It was August 31st of 1981.
That's my birthday, Pierre. That's my birthday, brother.
That is. That's right. I've also been here for a long time. I've been here for 38 years, and the station's been on the air for 52 years.
Whoa.
We have a lot of history in and play stuff old and new and still continue to do that. But I was here just starting out when the Go-Go's came by, and I still have a picture, a black and white photo of you guys hanging out in our record library.
Oh, my God. It's so funny, but it's all really, Pierre, how hard, it's like hard to believe that was so many years ago. It just doesn't feel real. When I think about like the early 80s, I think, oh, that was about 10 years ago. going by so fast, man.
It does. That was so the tour fast. You were opening for the Police at the Spectrum, in fact.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Of course, I was just talking about that and how that, you know, catapulted us into a number one album, being on tour with them. We had been touring in a 12-seater van, miserable, all over this country, playing in clubs. And then we got a call to our manager, Ginger, from Miles Copeland, who was the head of IRS Records. His brother is, Stuart in the Police. And his other brother was Ian, and he had that our booking agency, FBI.
Right.
And he was like, do you guys want to open for the Police? And we're like, yes, we want to open for the Police. So we dropped that van off, went back to L.A., and went on tour with them and toured all over the country and all over the world. And soon into that, in like a month in that, our record went to number one. And that was some smart thinking on Miles Copeland's behalf. And after that, after we finished touring with them, we went back to L.A., rehearsed a couple weeks, and then we went on tour and headlined all those 20,000-seat arenas that we had just done with the Police.
That's so wild, because there's a scene in the documentary where your album passes the Police's record, and Sting comes in with a bottle of champagne to your dressing room and congratulates you, and you say, very gentlemanly of him.
Yes, that is absolutely true. They were so happy for us. I mean, those guys are such gentlemen. They really were. We had a really nice time with them. They were so supportive and great. And, you know, they were genuinely happy. on our record. They were genuinely happy. It was a really lovely time.
Well, as a drummer, I'm curious what you thought of Stuart Copeland's comments, because in the documentary, he said that you guys had the most important aspect of musicianship down, and he said that aspect is feel.
Well, you know what? I agree with him, because you know what? Everything is about feel. It's about playing your instrument with soul, and connecting on a deep level inside of you. I mean, but that's the way I approach my instrument. That's all I can say, Pierre. You know, it's a very deep connection within me. It's like I sit behind that drum kit and my body just does what it does. I'm like, I kind of get in a haze. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm just doing it and I'm following along. And I just, you know, you get in remote control, like somebody's controlling this from them. And I'm very lucky to be one of those folks. I never had to take lessons. You know, I just would come home. I tried playing different instruments, and I came home from school one day, and I was like, I'm going to try the drums. And I saved up my allowance money and bought a kit of drums from a pawn shop and came home and started playing with that. And it was like, I knew right away I'd never have to take lessons playing that instrument. It felt very comfortable for me. It was, I knew that that's what I was going to be winding up doing. I knew I wanted to be on stage, like all the people, all the bands that I was going to see. I was so into music. And then at the age of 21, going out to L.A. and meeting the girls, and, you know, the rest is history.
Right. We're speaking with Gina Schock, the drummer of the Go-Go's. They have a new single out for the first time in 20 years, and I want to ask you about it. It's just great. It's called Club Zero. Tell us about it.
Well, it's a classic Go-Go's song. I mean, you hear that and you know it's the Go-Go's.
Right.
As you say, it has been around 20 years, and we were getting ready to do the documentary, and we were thinking, you know what? We need to do something. Penny, come in here. You're going to die in the heat, my dog. I said, we were like, we've got to do something for the fans here. And so we were like, let's write a song. Let's do a song and put it in the documentary. So that's what we did. And it wasn't an easy job because you know, Jane's in Mexico, Charlotte's in L.A., Kathy's in Austin, I'm in San Francisco, and Belinda's in Bangkok. So, you know, we did this over the phone. It was not easy. And then we got together here in San Francisco at Secret Studios, and a fellow named Travis Kasperbauer was at the helm producing. And we knocked that song out in 2 days, and I was very proud of us. I was like, we're finally really professionals. We can go in 2 days after not recording something in 20 years, and we knocked it out in 2 days. Whoa!
That's so cool. It just sounds great, though, and I think some of the best stuff doesn't need a lot of finishing. It just comes out of you, as you said, the same way you play the drums.
Yeah, my approach to playing drums always has been about how to elevate the song. When we get together, I mean, I'm not a show-off drummer. I'm just like, I want to keep the beat, keep it nice and strong, you know, good timing. If you're not good timing in your drummer, you ought to forget it, man. And fortunately, I do have really good timing. But, yeah, whatever. I don't know. I'm talking about myself too much here.
No, you're not. As I said, you're featured prominently in the documentary. When Our Lips Are Sealed came out, MTV was big, and you had mentioned Miles Copeland. And he had, as I understand it, $6,000 left over from a video that the police didn't use. And so that financed the video where all of the band are riding around in either an old Pontiac or an old Oldsmobile through L.A. singing. It's a great video.
I believe.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. You know, Pierre, everything we did was on a budget. You know, IRS did not have a lot of money, okay? They were a very small label, but they had us. They had REM and Oingo Boingo had reached nobody had reached millions and millions of people at that time. So, yeah, we did everything on a budget. I think we had $60,000 to do that first record from top to bottom. So we were just grateful for anything we could get because it was all new to us, this whole thing. We were excited about every single thing that happened.
Well, I mean, it always sounded that way. I mean, I loved seeing the band every time. I saw you open for the police, then I saw you on your headlining tour, and every time it was that kind of energy. You know, the documentary goes into some of the rougher times, but clearly there's a bond that the great bands can overcome those rough spots in the road and find the commonality, I guess you could say.
Absolutely, Pierre. You know, we are all, I mean, I'll speak for myself, but I'm sure the girls feel this way. We're so grateful at this point in our lives to have been together over 40 years. And we have had our ups and downs like any family does. This band is a family. That's just the bottom line here. And we can only stay angry with each other for so long. And then, you know, we all make up, and there's a real bond in this band. And fortunately, you know, we're all pretty good at what we can do, so we have something to offer. And we are super grateful, you know, to our fans all the time. We have some really, really, really incredible fans that stick by us.
Got to go, Pierre. I got to wrap up.
Okay, one quick last question.
I have to go. It's 2 minutes after. I gave you some extra.
Would you see yourself Would you see yourself touring when the COVID thing ends, Gina?
Yes, yes. We will be on. Hopefully, we will be back on tour. We were supposed to tour this year. We didn't because of the COVID thing. But next year, they're already booking June and July for us to be out on tour.
Excellent.
So let's keep our fingers crossed and say a couple prayers, and hopefully this horrible thing will be over, and we'll be back out on the road like everyone else.
We'll see you then. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with us at MMR.
No problem. Bye, hon.
Cheerio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.